Thank you so much. Hi, everybody. It is a pleasure to be with all of you. And as we would say in the Boston area, I hope you had a wicked awesome opening of school. Today, actually, in Brockton, Massachusetts, where I'm from, was the first day the kids came because, of course, in Massachusetts, we are Puritans and we would never think of starting school before Labor Day. But anyway, enough about that. What a great way to open the school year with a focus on literacy. So here's what I'm going to be doing in this next hour. I'm going to start with just a brief introduction about why are we doing this with literacy and what difference will that make? What does the research say? But then I'm going to get to the real meat of this, which is the strong power of a school-wide literacy initiative and what it takes to make that happen. And there's no magic formulas here. It was four deliberate steps. I'm going to talk about how this is very easily replicable. Even though I was a high school person, this is not about secondary. This is about a process of getting a literacy initiative in your school, whether it's elementary, middle school, high school. It's all about literacy. And then, like we all know this, with all of you in education on this webinar, you know that we get a lot of initiatives, and a lot of them don't stick. So how do you take this and really make it something that is long-lasting? Because it is about literacy, and it should be. So in case you are thinking, well, who is this woman anyway, and why is she doing this webinar, I'm going to skip over this because you already heard my background, but you can see my teeny little face in the middle of that crowd of kids. Brockton High was a huge urban high school. But as I said, this is not just about a high school. We, however, were in trouble. I'm using an old Boston Globe front page, and the reason is in Massachusetts, there's a high-stakes exam called MCAS. And when that started, unfortunately, and I, by the way, also graduated from that school, so it was personal and it was hurtful, we were ranked as one of the lowest performing schools in Massachusetts. We were even called an educational cesspool by our local media, which is pretty terrible. And so what do? You can either wring your hands or you can try some things. And we implemented a literacy initiative, and we ended up back on the front page of the Boston Globe as the Massachusetts turnaround story. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on our data because I want to get to the literacy, but just to show you the power of what literacy did in our school, and the reason I'm using 98 is that's the first year that the MCAS kicked in. And so our advanced and proficient ranking in ELA and math was pitiful, and now it's pretty strong. And by the way, we're not happy with it because it's not 100%, but we're getting there, and we always are. And I've been retired, and the literacy initiative continues on. Our failure rate was really awful, and you have to know that in Massachusetts, the kids must pass to graduate. So we had three-quarters of our kids not graduating. And our failure rate now is in single digits. Something also we're not happy about because it's not zero, but we're proud of the improvement. And because of the success we had, we even ended up, woohoo, on the front page of the New York Times, which is pretty cool. And I love the work of Pedro Noguera. If you haven't read his work, you should. It really is powerful about equity. We're in his book, Excellence Through Equity. But I love what Pedro said about our school. He talks about us all the time. He's been there. He said, Brockton High demonstrates, and this is about all of our schools, you don't change the student population to get results. You change the conditions under which they learn. And that's what we did. And I really want to stress this is not just high school. Because I know how I am. I think we're all, as educators, we're like, oh, yes, but she's a secondary person. What does she know for those of us that are elementary people? And it is about leadership and change. And it doesn't matter. You will get something across in the school and adjust it to make it age appropriate. But the power of doing something across the school was awesome for us. I just recently presented at the end of June at the Model Schools Conference, and a principal from an elementary school in Panama City, Florida, Blythe Carpenter, came up to me. I hadn't met her, and she said 2 years ago she took over her school, and it was an F school in Florida. And she said to me, I downloaded all your PowerPoints. We did a literacy initiative that we followed what you did. We adjusted it to make it age appropriate. But as you can see from her quote, they went from one of the lowest performing 300 schools in the state of Florida with an F grade to an A school in just 2 years. And she did it with a focus on literacy, particularly in reading. And I mean, that just made me so proud. I feel like it was my school, so I'm so proud of her. But I put that in to not only give a shout out to Blythe and her team at in Panama City, but also so that you realize my message isn't ever just about elementary or secondary. I think it's across the board. This was, in fact, I put in, you can see the improvement in look at her report card. So it's pretty powerful when you focus on literacy. So let me get to the how. How did we do that? Well, as I mentioned at the beginning, it isn't about buying special programs. There's no silver bullets, no magic formula. If there was a special program we could buy, wouldn't we all buy it and we'd all be proficient? But what we did, however, and I'll say this a number of times in this presentation, it was simple set of steps, but it's not easy. Everybody on this webinar knows that no change in a school is ever easy. We focused relentlessly on literacy, and for a number of reasons, starting with research. The research is overwhelming that reading and writing are critical to student success in and out of schools. But here's what we know. It's talked about all the time, but it's not being done everywhere. So why aren't we doing it? Well, I can give you some quotes that I heard from faculty in our school, faculty and administration in our school. Why weren't we focusing on literacy initially? Well, because it's not my area of expertise. And by the way, it wasn't mine. I was a history teacher, so I didn't know how. So I'm not coming at this expertise because I was always a reading teacher. Nope, I had to learn it like everybody else. Well, I don't have time. Well, they should already know. We are very good at saying this at the high school level, by the way. Well, they should already know how to do this by the time they reach my grade level. Well, and let's not forget we have to cover the curriculum. Well, it's too hard. Oh, it's not my job. Well, you know what? There's a lot of things we can say, blah, 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 but it's not getting across the most important thing, which is these are skills our students need. Every presentation I do, whether it's a webinar or whether it's in person or whether I'm just working in a school, I stress these all the time. Look, literacy isn't a trend. You know, it's not like one of these cool technology programs. It's also not an event like, okay, I'm going to do literacy tomorrow and then never again. It doesn't get dated. Literacy, reading, writing, speaking, thinking, those are skills that remain with us always. It doesn't cost a fortune. You don't have to buy special things. And it can easily be replicated. And that's what I'm going to, if we can do this, anybody can. That's going to be the message in this webinar. It really is not just about high expectations. I think sometimes we use jargon too much. But we can have all kinds of expectations, but it's not about just having the expectations. We've got to give the kids the skills they need. So how did we do that? The power of what we did and the power of what anyone on this webinar can do came in a school-wide initiative. And here's why I stress school-wide. And every time I say this, of course, I can't see you. That's the weird thing about a webinar. But whenever I'm doing presentations and I'm looking out at the audience, whenever I say this, every educator nods their heads, that so often our schools become separate classrooms. Everybody's got their own empire. I did when I was teaching history, and I had my rules and my expectations and my standards. What I'm suggesting is that we refocus and bring some things, by the way, not everything, because everybody does have their own personalities and styles and all that. But my message to you is going to be that there are some literacy skills that are so essential to our kids being successful, not just in school, but in their lives beyond school, that we should all teach them, whether we're history teachers or science teachers or first grade teachers or ninth grade teachers. They're so powerful, we all should be doing this. So we moved in Brockton from comments like, this is my classroom, my kingdom. I think I might have said that, actually. I'm glad I don't teach that subject. MCAS doesn't affect my testing area, so it doesn't impact me. And I know this sounds like corny, like I'm making this up. I'm not. We had people, once we really got this literacy initiative going, we had people saying things like, we make a difference when we all worked on writing. How can we help math now? What are we going to do next? This is going to work. It was really about changing our culture. We used our data first to figure out where to start. We set very clear expectations about what we would teach the students to be able to do, and that was literacy. More on that in a moment. But here was the key. We taught the adults how. And I don't ever mean to sound disparaging or insulting to any teacher. I am one. But I will tell you, I'm going to use myself as an example. I think many teachers in our schools are like me. I wasn't opposed to teaching literacy. I didn't know how. So here's me, the history teacher. I would give students a difficult reading, and I would then say, and the kids would look at me and say, "Oh, I miss, I don't get this." And I would think, "Oh, I must teach reading, and here's how I taught it." Well, then read it again. Or if they still didn't get it, I went to my next level of teaching reading. Read it more slowly this time. So we needed to teach the adults, and because their instruction mattered. So here's, I guess, the clearest way to say it. You want to improve your school and get a literacy initiative in the school, focus on the adults. So now let me get to the real specifics, the simple, not easy. There were really four steps. And by the way, I lay these out, and you have access to this. This PowerPoint will be posted, and you have access to all this. But here are our four steps. There's nothing unusual here. The first one was we empowered a team, and I suspect every one of you on this webinar already are part of a pretty strong team. We then focused step two relentlessly on literacy. We implemented with a plan, and we monitored like crazy. All of those took leadership, and I don't just mean positional leadership. Lead from where you are. So let me break each of these down, but I'm going to focus in this webinar, because of the time limitations, I'm going to focus on steps three and four, because, first of all, my bet is you already have teams in your school, and if you're on this webinar, you're already interested in focusing on literacy. So the key is how. So my focus is going to be three and four. Just a quick touch on one and two. Our team really was a mixture of teachers and administrators. Two-thirds were teachers. And we made a mistake. You know what we did? I tell this story in every presentation, and if anyone's ever heard me present before, they've heard me say this. But we tried to outguess the test. We looked at the test, and we said, "Oh, what do we think we need to teach the kids? What do you think is going to be on the test?" And the result of that, which is what we jokingly call the great Shakespearean fiasco. By the way, I just want to add one thing about our team that was doing this. We had such a big school. Our team was about 15 teachers. If you've got a smaller school and it can involve initially the entire faculty, all the better. But our initial team was our leadership group. But yes, but everybody became involved in the literacy workshops. More on that in a minute. Our Shakespearean fiasco came when we tried to teach Shakespearean sonnets to everybody, which was ridiculous. You can probably imagine what happened. There was no Shakespeare question on the test. And, you know, we cursed about it a little bit. But it taught us an important lesson that we couldn't focus on a test. We needed to figure out the skills kids need. So try these questions sometime with your faculty and your own team. Instead of saying, "Oh, what do we think is going to be on the test?" we tried this. What are the skills our students need to be able to do to be successful on the test? You've got to look at what the kids are being asked to do. But then we went beyond it and we said, what are the skills our kids need to be able to do to be successful in class? And then what about in their lives beyond school? And from that discussion, by the way, our entire faculty had that discussion in interdisciplinary discussion groups. And what we determined is we knew that our kids needed to learn how to handle some very challenging reading passages. They needed to learn how to write a lot because our kids were not writing well. They needed to solve multi-step problems and explain thinking. They also needed to speak professionally. Even though that wasn't on the test, it was something we needed to focus on. That's what led us to literacy. So that brings me to step two. We defined it. What does literacy mean? And for us, we defined it by saying reading, writing, speaking, and reasoning. By the way, we had a pretty good fight about should we call it reasoning or thinking? It really doesn't matter. It's what you decide in your own group. But we liked reasoning better because we thought it was more mathematical and analytical. And we wanted to incorporate, we didn't want to separate literacy and numeracy. We wanted to incorporate both into one. Now, I'm not going to spend a long time on this because this is what we defined our literacy initiative to be. You are welcome to have it, to look at it, but I always suggest every school needs to define their focus for themselves. But as you can see, the centerpiece is four big domains: reading, writing, speaking, and reasoning. And the subject areas support those big literacy skills. Okay, so now we have these cool-looking charts, right? So what happens then? We all have cool-looking charts in our room, but it doesn't mean instruction changes. What changed instruction was when we started to teach the teachers. So instead of someone like me saying, read it again, maybe I could, as a history teacher, learn some reading strategies that my students might actually learn the history better. So now I'm going to focus, the biggest part of the rest of this webinar actually is going to focus on steps 3 and 4, which is, how did we do this? This is really the how-to, and this is the part that can trip people up, because it's great to say this, right? Oh, we all must focus on literacy. But I think you're on this webinar because it's like, how? So we took our faculty meetings. In Massachusetts, we have very strong union contracts, and that's fine. And so we could only have 2 meetings a month. So we went to the principal at the time, and we said, we'd like to use our faculty meetings as literacy workshops instead of just making announcements. And so because we were performing so poorly, everybody was on board about that. And it was our team that wrote these workshops. It was really about adult learning. Here's what we did, and I'm going to show you, I'm going to give you actually an entire literacy workshop in just a minute. Here was the key to our whole transformation. We modeled for our faculty the process to teach a skill in reading or writing that they would then teach to the students. So it was about how do we teach these literacy skills? Now, where do we start? Okay, well, we looked at our data, and we noticed that our students were not handling the writing questions well at all. In fact, they were leaving them blank, or they were barely putting sentences together, or they were writing off topic. So we said, we can't do all of this literacy at once. Let's start with writing. And so we, this leadership team that included 2/3 teachers and a group of us that were stumbling along trying to figure out what to do, we decided that we would start with a literacy workshop that combined some active reading strategies with teaching the kids how to respond in writing to that reading. So in other words, I'm that history teacher, for example. It doesn't matter what you teach, a science teacher, a math teacher, it doesn't matter. I provide the reading that supports my curriculum. And so you make it age appropriate for those of you on the webinar that are elementary teachers. For sure, you find a reading that's challenging for your kids, but age appropriate. Something that's going to support the curriculum you're teaching. And then I, the teacher, selected that reading, and I wrote a good question, a rigorous question about that passage. Now, the reason we started with that is that can cross all disciplines, no matter what subject. So, for example, if you're a fifth grade teacher and you're teaching a lesson that involves science, why not pick a reading that supports what you're going to teach in science and write a strong question? That way, the students are going to demonstrate their writing skill, but they're also going to understand the content better. By the way, that is really strongly supported in the research. The reason we started with that is, this is the research that shows you, students themselves will process the content in a much clearer way when they're required to write about it. Because you know, and it doesn't matter what grade you teach, when you ask a student if they understand it, they always say yes. I used to say that all the time to the kids. Are you with me? Oh, yes, yes, yes. No, they're not. So getting them to write about it is going to give you information, teachers, about, it's really diagnostic, isn't it? You're going to learn, you're going to figure out when the kids have had to write about it, what they need to, what diagnostic information, what do you need to reteach? What did they tell you they understood and in fact they didn't? The Harvard Grad School of Education did a whole study. They actually studied us, but they've done all kinds of work in reading and writing and literacy. And I love this line. The integration of reading and writing strategies helps students make the leap from knowing to understanding, and that's powerful. And just a little bit more research, and I'll get to the specifics of this, but writing about material read improves their comprehension. And, I mean, we told the kids that, because, like, why do we have to do this, Miss? This is math class. I shouldn't have to write. Yes, you do. And it's about teaching students how to write because it improves their reading comprehension, reading fluency, and word reading. And by the way, probably if there are any math teachers on this line, on this webinar, one of the first observations our own math department made was part of the reasons they were struggling with the math was all of the reading that was on that they were facing. And so increasing how much students write enhances their reading comprehension. So for us, writing was the way to start. And I always advise leadership teams that I'm working with, when in doubt, start with writing. Now, I'm going to go through this. I have actually included for you an entire, the actual literacy workshop. The reason I'm doing that is I think oftentimes people are on a webinar, they go to a presentation, and they listen, and they take some notes, but then they get back, and they're looking for the template. Because not that you would do it exactly this way, although you're welcome to, but I always suggest to people, take what we did and make it your own. And that way, though, I want you to see the actual full workshop. Now, I'm just going to walk through this quickly because the point of this webinar is to talk about building the culture. If I were actually doing a leadership team group at your schools, I would actually run you through this workshop so that you could see how this worked. But I think you'll easily be able to follow it. And as I said, make it your own. If we were actually doing this literacy workshop, it's aimed at about 45 to 50 minutes. So obviously I'm not going to have you do this. I just wanted you to see what I meant when I said we modeled for the faculty the process that they would then teach to the kids. So this next set of slides is the actual literacy workshop that we did with our faculty. And the structure we used was always the same. For any literacy workshop, whatever skill we were teaching, we'd always have some kind of opener that talked about why we were doing this. We gave a little bit about what we were doing and why. We modeled the steps the teachers would then teach to the students. We would give the teachers some practice on it and some discussion time. We would talk about our next steps, and there would always be some kind of closer. So with that outline in mind, and by the way, I know what you're all thinking on this. You're looking at it and saying, hey, that's just a good template for a good lesson plan. Right. That's what we were doing. You know what this really was about? Teachers teaching teachers. And we were teaching ourselves the skills that we were then going to teach to the kids. So let me show you the actual literacy workshop. Now, again, pardon the speed that I'll go through this because my intent here is not to have you actually do it. If I was doing this with you, I would actually have you do the steps that I'm going to share with you. That would take way too long in this webinar. But anyway, so I would be welcoming you to this workshop. Here is the agenda. We're going to talk about why we're doing this, what the research says. I'm going to share with you some active reading strategies, some writing strategies, how to use the rubric, and then where do we go from here. So all the teachers would say, why are we here? Well, we're here because we need to improve the kids' skills, their performance, and because writing matters. I actually already showed you this. Why are we starting with this? Because it fits with the content, it crosses all disciplines, it's measurable, and it helps the kids. I actually provided some of the same research I just shared with you, so I won't go back through that. And then we started teaching the teachers the skills. So let's begin. The very first step, and let me sort of backtrack for a second. Picture myself, here I was a history teacher who didn't know how to teach reading. Imagine being able to learn some of these steps. I found myself saying, geez, I wish I knew that before when I was using a difficult primary source document. And I would just give it to the kids and say, you know, here's an excerpt from the Federalist Papers, something that a 15-year-old always loves. And so how do you attack that? And the kids didn't know. I just gave it to them. So, all right, so how do you start? Well, the first step in teaching the students to write well is to teach them how to actively read the question, the text, and be able to determine the purpose. What's the purpose for reading? So how do you determine the purpose? You teach the kids the first thing they should do before they jump. Now, this is, by the way, for any grade level. Before they jump into the reading, direct them to the question. Look at the question. That's going to help students determine the purpose for reading. Then we gave everybody the same set of active reading steps. And by the way, we had some fighting over this, not really fighting, but some discussion, because people said, well, I like them to circle and underline. And other people said, well, I like them to use a pink highlighter. And somebody else said, well, I like them to use double column notes. What we did differently was we said to the faculty, that's confusing to the students. When we're teaching these skills, we're all going to do it the same way. So we actually gave them, I'm going to show you in a minute, we gave them a reading and a question, and we said, look at the question, circle key direction verbs, underline important information. So let's show what step one is. We're going to actively read the question, circle and underline. And this was a reading we used with the adults. Now, this is actually a seventh grade reading. And I didn't mean to say that like it sounds disparaging, like as teachers we would only handle a seventh grade reading. We picked a reading that would be a good, interesting nonfiction piece. When you have a chance later, you can actually read it. It's about how hamburgers first became popular. But now we had teachers first directed them to the question. And so let's do it. Here was the question. Based on the excerpt, explain why it took many years for hamburgers to become popular in the United States. Support your answer with important and specific information. Then we actually had the teachers do it. Circle the key direction verbs, underline important information. So you're probably already doing this in your head. I would actually give you time to do this. I'm not going to now, but you can immediately see you would have circled explain. You would have circled support. You would underline things like why it took years for hamburgers to become popular, important and specific information, and so forth. And then we shared it out. Okay, after we've done that, we went to step two. Now, by the way, the kids hate this step because we made them write the prompt, the question prompt, the direction, in their own words. And we taught them how to do that by flipping the question. And many of you on this webinar do this all the time anyway, but we had the teachers do this. It took hamburgers many years to become popular for a number of reasons, such as, now you have to leave the blanks there because the kids haven't read the teachers haven't read the text yet, but that's setting you up for the purpose of why you're going to do this reading. Because we all know that there is oftentimes extraneous information in a reading or in a, that throws kids off. So we were getting them to focus on the purpose for the reading. Step three, and I'm not going to spend any time with this, obviously, now they actively read the text. And in that was to, by developing by actively reading the text, they were taking notes, but always aimed at answering the question. And in order to do that, they created a map to their response. And we gave everybody the blank graphic organizer, and they had to fill it in as they were reading the text. So why hamburgers took so long to become popular in the United States, then you can see reason, reason, reason. And then finally came the next step, which was writing the response. Now, just so you know, when we did the literacy workshop, we did not have the teachers actually write out the response. As you can see, it says we will not do this step today. We felt like that wasn't the purpose. We knew, you know, as teachers, we are good readers and good writers. It's not a good use of the time necessarily to have people write their essay. But we wanted them to experience the steps that they would then be teaching to the kids. So we gave them this essay guideline to help them, and we reviewed these were the steps that we want you to use with your students. And the final step is we all used a common rubric. Now, this was the rubric we used. I know fully well I work with schools all the time. Many of you have far better rubrics. So you've used rubric. It doesn't matter what one you use. The key is that you all use the same one. That was the power in what we did, getting everybody to do the same thing. By the way, the kids' butts started to notice it. They would start saying things like, we already did this in our science class. Right. So you should be powerful when we all did this together. We also stressed for the teachers that they needed to grade this lesson because it shouldn't be just seen as yet another thing. This had to count. The kids needed to understand it was important. So teachers could choose. They could count it as a test grade or a project grade. And they also needed to have the kids do it in class. We really wanted to ratchet up the importance of this lesson. Finally, we gave them suggestions for follow-up with it and what our next steps would be, how we were going to implement this. And we finished with this closer, and that was that I love this book, Talent is Overrated by Jeff Colvin, because oftentimes people forget about making that things take time and practice. Every musician and coach in the room, I mean, on this webinar knows this. You don't learn something by doing it once. It takes practice. So deliberate practice is hard. It hurts, but it works. Tons of it equals better performance. I mean, more of it equals better performance. Tons of it equals great performance. And by the way, a question was asked to me about how long it took to create these materials, the steps, the rubrics, who created it, the team. What we always did, those are great questions. Our leadership team, which again, two-thirds teachers, we did create it first, but before we did it, we always put it out first to test it with, you know, when we shared this rubric, we asked the faculty to look at it first before we, in fact, they made some suggestions because here's a good example to answer that question. The first rubric we sent out did not have a strong content component to it. And one of our science teachers said, you know, my students could end up getting an A or the highest number of points on the rubric and be wrong. And so we revised our rubric based on faculty input. A question about how long it took to create these materials. I'll tell you, honestly, the very first time we did it, it took us a long time. It took us probably two or three of our own planning team meetings. We practiced it on each other. But once we did one workshop, we followed the same format for all of them. And people always ask me, where did you get the steps from? And my answer is, we made them up. We made them up by doing the process ourselves and saying, what did we do first? What did we do second? So what we did is we did the planning of this over the summer. Because we don't start school till after Labor Day, we did the training of the faculty in the month of October because we had two faculty meetings, and then we kicked it off in November. So the first time around, very honestly, it takes some time because we'd never done this before. And by the way, here's another behind-the-scenes comment. We were nervous presenting it to our own colleagues. Here we are, teachers. We do this stuff all the time. We're always presenting stuff. Present it to your own colleagues. Jeez, you're so nervous. You think, oh, my God, I'm so nervous. We actually did it in teams because we were so nervous doing it with each other. Now, I want to show you that I put this in, and I'm just going to flash through these slides. But what I just quickly talked you through, here's the actual script I would have been saying. So it gives you a really good template. Now, I would say to you, you got to make it sound like yourself, and you got to make it fit for what you want. But the slides I just showed you, sometimes my script was as simple as we'll read the slide. But sometimes it was more detailed. Notice the one at slide 10. Hand out the reading. Say to the participants. And you can see now we're taking them through this. So you've got not only the literacy workshop that we did, but you've got the actual script we used when we presented it. And so I think when you download this afterwards, you can really take a look at it and say, this is a good beginning. It may not be exactly right for you, but it's all to me anyway. It's always easier to respond to something than try and make it up the first time. Okay, so now we trained everybody. Then what? Well, now came the shift from the training to the actual instruction on the part of the teachers. The teachers now had to pick an article that they were going to use and write a good challenging question about it, and then teach the process with fidelity. Now, see this slide? It has a calendar. This is obviously very high school oriented because I'm showing you the one we did. But I'm going to also show you some examples of how, talk about some examples of how elementary and middle schools dealt with this. Because high school is often focused around subject areas, notice what we did. You see the dates we actually did this. Follow the journey of a kid at our school. They did it once in November in social studies. So they had a particular reading. If I'm that history teacher and I did a reading on the Constitution and a question on the Constitution, they got the process. Couple weeks went by, they got it again, this time in their phys ed class or JROTC if they had it. Then a couple weeks went by and they got it again in science. Different reading, different question, same process. Then in math, then in foreign language, etc. Now, I did this with I worked in a very small elementary district, I mean a K-12 district in Lebanon, Tennessee, and they adopted this fully, and here's all they did. They only had one first grade and one second grade or two second grades. The principal just used it by assigning teachers' names so that they made sure they did this for kids every few weeks. Because what brain research says is, if you don't revisit something, you're going to forget it. So it doesn't have to be based on subject area like we did it. That fits for a high school. But you'd want to think about the best structure for your school with this key in mind. What's a way that you can assign it so a student gets deliberate, repeated practice? Our critical element list, none of this was left to chance. Teachers were assigned when to do it. They picked the subject, they picked the reading and the question, but they did it when it was assigned because we wanted to make sure kids got repeated practice. Now, we've done, because it's been years that we've been doing this, we've done many literacy workshops. These are all, I mean, for the sake of a one-hour webinar, you can't obviously do that. I just wanted to show you one. But we did literacy workshop and additional active reading strategies. We did how to, this is kind of a cool response. One of our teachers said, she said, I noticed that the quality of my students' writing often depended on the caliber of question I'm asking. I think we needed a workshop on asking rigorous questions. And we did that. We did the same format, graphing across the curriculum, taught everybody how to teach some graphing strategies. Vocabulary strategies. You know how I used to teach vocabulary? Look it up. And then write it in a sentence. There's many of you on this webinar have far better skills than I did about how do you teach these. There's lots of great strategies, but what we hit on was not every teacher owns them. And when we started teaching these strategies to the teachers, it changed instruction in the school. All right, that brings me to the fourth step, which is monitor, monitor, monitor. I'm really a believer in what gets monitored is what gets done. And I don't mean monitoring in a negative or punitive way at all. Monitoring wasn't about a gotcha. Monitoring was about, you know, making sure that this was being done and the work was rigorous and consistent. Simple, not easy. Now, we monitored what the students were doing by using a common standard. We all used this rubric. And that was part of our training. How do I use this rubric? But we also monitored how the faculty was implementing it by using a very simple walkthrough tool. Now, here it is. Now, some of you are going to laugh when I say this, but I'm old, and I've lived through millions of walkthrough tools in my career. I was in the business for 40 years. There was one that I had. The walkthrough tool was 10 pages long. Now, I am sorry. If I have to fumble through 10 pages of a walkthrough tool, that is way too much. Notice how simple ours is. It was what's working well, more support needed or met expectation. So there's the very simple walkthrough tool that we use. And then here's where the real power came. And I bet that the people on this webinar do this all the time in your schools. We did, and we had never done this before, so this was new to us. We had to really structure some good conversations around the student work. So in other words, we put all of our ninth grade history teachers together. And they, even though they might have used different readings and different questions, they were using the same process with the same age of kids. So we started having some great collegial conversations around examining student work. And we asked people to bring samples of papers And, you know, and I've worked a lot with schools that have PLCs. If you have, we didn't have them, sadly, at the time I was there. But if you are fortunate enough, I was working in Poughkeepsie, New York, and they had PLCs, and the teachers used the PLC time. It was fabulous to talk about the questions, to talk about the student work. Now, I just mentioned this. One of our colleagues noticed, as people started looking at student work, she noticed what she needed. We need a workshop on asking effective questions. So we did that. The key to what we did was consistency. And I think oftentimes we lack that in schools. And I don't mean that as a unique to anybody. I just think it's a nature of, you know, the volume of what we deal with in education. Oh, my goodness, there's always things coming at us. When you can become consistent and everybody uses the same process, it really is powerful in powerful instruction for the students because they get deliberate practice and they get thinking routines. Now, some of you may be thinking this because I've gotten this criticism before. Well, that seems like a cookie cutter approach. And you know what? The answer is it is, because at the ages that we're dealing with us, with our children, that's what they need is pattern and structure. Again, I'm going to go back to coaching and musicians. If you're a musician, you don't start off and the music teacher doesn't throw Mozart at you. You start off by doing scales and drills. When you're a coach, you don't throw a kid into the game. You start with doing practice, practice, practice. That's what this is. It's about thinking routines. Now, a question I'm asked in every presentation is, how did you get buy-in from the faculty? And, you know, I'm going to say this. If we waited for buy-in, we'd still be waiting, because we all know there are some folks that are, you know, that are always cautious about buying into anything. And I don't blame them. I lived through a lot of initiatives over the years. What really got us the buy-in was when we started to get results. Here's what happened. In 1 year of focusing on the writing, 1 year, we cut our failure rate in half. Now, by the way, that still was kind of stinky, but it was when you start getting results like that, we doubled the percentage of students reaching proficiency. That was powerful. The next year we did it again. We were actually studied by Harvard, and this we're featured in this report how high schools become exemplary. But Ron Ferguson is the chair of the Achievement Gap Institute. And if any of you have gaps between your students of color and regular ed students, listen to what Ferguson says. And by the way, I just want to respond. I just got a question up. Were all teachers expected to buy in the first year, or did you do it in stages? That's a great question. I would tell you, and I know this is going to sound almost mandatory, it was. The buy-in came later. They had to do it. But they had to do it according to when it was in the calendar. We encouraged them to do it more often, but some people only did it once. The buy-in came later, and so we didn't give people an option to opt out because we just felt like it was so important. We needed to be teaching it to all kids. I guess I'd say it this way in answer to this question, which I think is it's the right question to ask. A kid shouldn't be have to be, it shouldn't be success by chance, right? In other words, it shouldn't be a kid only is lucky enough to learn this if they get Mrs. Writing Teacher. And if they get Mrs. Worksheet, they don't. So we felt it was so important, we mandated it. But I would say some people were not happy about it, but we supported them like crazy. We tried to make it as positive as we could, and it was about the kids. But there were some people who were fussing about it. And you know what? Sometimes we just kept saying, is this the best we can be? 44% of our kids failed English and 75% failed math. Is this the best we can be? We need to do something. So that's, in answer to that question, we didn't give the option. Listen to this. This is a very short clip of a video. Listen to what the Harvard professor said about us. It's a pretty powerful indication of what happened.
Happy Friday, VHS! That was the late bell.
After the first year of the literacy program, Brockton cut its failure rate in English nearly in half. The next year, Brockton did it again. And today, 94% of students here pass English on the MCAT. And that's gotten the attention of education experts like Ron Ferguson.
They have found ways to do some of the things that other folks think can't be done, and it's impressive.
Ferguson researches education and public policy at Harvard. He featured Brockton in his 2009 report on 15 exemplary public high schools. He says he was impressed with how Brockton implemented the literacy program. For instance, student work was routinely collected and monitored to make sure the teachers were using the initiative correctly in class.
I have never seen that in another school, in any other school. It's just a level of planning and meticulousness that you just don't see.
And Ferguson believes that Brockton can be a model for schools around the country.
The central ingredient is a small cadre of leaders who won't accept no for an answer. And it's a continuous improvement process where you're never satisfied, you're never finished, and it's understood that everybody's got to play.
And I love that line. It's understood that everybody's got to play. Listen to what the kids say. These are two of our students that were interviewed by CBS Evening News, and listen to what they said. It'll make you laugh, but it's a great way. It's sort of a great thumbs up.
The students weren't even taco proud.
Honestly, I hated it. I thought it was tedious.
Basketball player Neffy Marsh rolled her eyes at first.
Even though it's just warm, I feel the pressure on me.
But now she says it has upped her game on all fronts.
Everything's clearer. Actually, there are times from when I'm on the court to when I'm inside making my bed. It's crazy. Literacy objectives get to you. They creep up on you.
It prepared me for the SATs. It prepared me for life in general and how to communicate.
Tatiana, initially described by her teachers as a total nightmare,
was only used to be a service,
is now college bound.
From what I was and then who I became is like, wow, I'm really proud of myself.
I think that what you see here are kids that think it's cool to be smart.
And I love what the kids said. And by the way, if you want to access these videos, The documentary that was done on us was by PBS on the show Need to Know, and there's the link for you. You can check. So let's think about the process that we used. It really started with a team of teachers and some administrators, and we targeted the skill that we were going to focus on. And that became our focus on literacy. Once we focused on the skill, the team developed that step-by-step process, whatever it was, whether it was graphing, writing, speaking, whatever it was. Then we had a plan of how are we going to implement this. And we would do it by having a literacy workshop led by our own team. And by the way, we stumbled sometimes. We weren't always masterful, but we gave it the best shot we were. We developed some kind of calendar or timeline to make sure the kids got repeated practice. And we monitored it like crazy by watching how the faculty did it and see if we needed to adjust things. And use a common assessment, some kind of rubric, for example, and then talked about the student work, compared to student work. Now, you're all in this webinar because you want to try something maybe, so can you replicate this? And my answer is you bet. I believe in education we need to steal from each other all the time. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. I just gave you a whole literacy workshop. You can replicate the process. Here are some places I work all the time in different schools, but here are some recent ones. I've spent a long time in Birdville, Texas, and they are so on board. This was their whole literacy across the district and their schools. Not just they did it K to 12, and in 1 year, I love this. Can you see the bottom of this? 10 of the 21 schools got double-digit gains on the Texas STAR exam. Double-digit gains. We were all so happy. We were all cheering. It was awesome. I worked a lot in West Virginia. One superintendent embraced this so much across his whole district. And in Jackson County, West Virginia, and I just put their report card up, so you know I'm not making this up, they went from 13th ranked in the state to third in 1 year. It was the second highest growth in the state. And the superintendent would tell you, I asked him, I said, what made the difference? And he said, non-negotiables. All means all. We use the same graphic organizer instead of having everybody pick their own because that could confuse the kids. We were consistent, we had literacy teams, and we monitored it. I worked in a very small district in Lebanon, Tennessee. They went K-12 on a writing program. Teacher leadership teams adjusted for age appropriateness. Teachers are great at that. They implemented the process in all their classrooms. They used a different type of calendar. They didn't make it subject-based. They made it teacher-based, and they monitored it like crazy. Okay, let me conclude with this last section in case there's any, and also any questions that anybody has. How do you really make this stick? You know, so many times our initiatives come and go, and if there's a new leader, everything falls apart. And I know, I mean, I'm not sure about those of you on this webinar, but in my last 10 years as principal, I had 4 different superintendents. And I don't think any superintendent can ever accept the same mission statement than any the previous one ever does. So we were always distracted by lots of initiatives. So you need something that's going to stick, and literacy should stick. So I sort of came up with this when I'm working with different teams and working in different schools to think about it as 4 C's. What do you need to do? You can really do it in 4 C's. The first C is clear course of action. I think we try to do too much in schools, and I'm a big fan of Mike Schmoke's work and his writings. Focus. And so figure out what literacy skill you want to focus on and develop an attack plan. And my suggestion, as I've already said a million times in this webinar, is start with writing. Because here's what we face. I bet you this looks like every strategic plan any of you have ever seen. It just makes you crazy. There's so much to do. You know what? You can't do it all. Somebody is reading my mind. I just got a question that said, did you involve your parents and community in this? That is going to be the next C, to communicate the importance. And the answer is yes. Initially, I would have to say we didn't involve our parents and community as much because we were trying to figure it out ourselves. But I'm gonna talk about how we did this with our parents. It was powerful. And by the way, in our school, we're a big urban district. We're about 85% minority, and about half of our students speak a language other than English in the home. So we actually had to communicate our literacy skills in multiple to the parents in multiple languages. But anyway, that brings me to the second C, which is communicate the importance of this. We really had to be very deliberate about telling everybody why we were doing this. It isn't just about a test. We tried that, remember, when we did Shakespearean sonnets, and that was ridiculous. And so what are we doing, and why are we doing this? And so who did we communicate it to? And we were relentless about this, tenacious about it. In fact, we drove everyone crazy with literacy. Kids already knew we were going to say this. Like, I'd walk into a classroom, and they'd say, oh, Dr. Zach, we already know. Literacy, literacy, literacy. Right. And so I always ask principals, if I went into the cafeteria and asked your students what was important to your principal or your teachers, what would the kids say? That for us, it was really something that we had to talk about relentlessly, not just our leadership team, our teachers as well. To the faculty, we were clear about what we were doing and why we were doing it. And we used the data to justify this. We talked about it constantly. We sent messages and tweets and emails and newsletters. And we didn't have any trouble, by the way, with the teacher evaluation rubrics because we weren't asking teachers to do anything beyond the contract or anything like that. It was about literacy, which is part of our evaluation system. So we tried to make it as seamless as we could. And by the way, in Massachusetts, we're a strongly unionized state, and the Massachusetts State Department of Education has very clear evaluation indicators. So we were very specific about making sure we kept it seamless. What we didn't want it to be was yet another thing. To the students, we did the same thing. We were in classes all the time. We met with students before they did this in groups so that we knew they'd blame the teachers. Like, in other words, why are you doing this? None of my other teachers make me do this. As the principal, I met with the kids and said, don't blame your teachers. blame me. We're all doing this because you need these skills. We actually got really good about, we just kept telling them, today I'm going to teach you something that is so important you'll remember it and use it for the rest of your life. Maybe that was a stretch, but you know what? It worked. We had everybody on board. You heard the kids in the video. And to the parents, we were clear about what we were doing. We actually reproduced the literacy charts in multiple languages. We made it the centerpiece of our parent open house. And we gave the parents strategies that they could use at home. And the third C is consistency. Implement effective professional development for adult learning. So we supported, by the way, those who needed more. There were teachers that said, I'm nervous about this. So we brought, you know, we had support colleague to colleague. But a key about consistency is all means all. We did not exempt anybody. Many of our students were not on board. I'm actually going to skip this video because I want to make sure I finish here on time. So let me just jump ahead there. That was just another student video, which you can see if you go to the link. The final C is celebrate. This is the fun part. I think we don't do this enough in schools. We are very quick to talk about our problems, but we need to also celebrate our improvement. And we thanked everybody. At the end of that year, we had a huge barbecue for the teachers. We said, you did something different this year. We had asked you to do something that was different. We celebrated like we had never celebrated before. Because you know what? If we don't get the message out, nobody else will. The media will always pick up on the negative stuff. We celebrated with the kids. We had student faculty celebrations. We had theme celebrations. And we publicized it. Somebody just asked a great question, which is, did teachers submit lesson plans incorporating literacy in their subject areas? Yes. We actually, in our contract, require teacher lesson plans. That's part of the contractual obligation. And what we did do, though, is provide them with a literacy lesson plan template to help them organize it. And another great question came up, which is, how long did it take before you started seeing a change in the school culture? The first year, now I'm going to be really honest, it was a culture of complaint. The kids were complaining, the teachers were complaining, everybody was complaining, and we that were on the planning team were saying things like, oh my God, I hope this works, because if this doesn't work, we're going to have a mutiny. Now, thank goodness, we had dramatic improvement in 1 year. And so the next year, we saw a big time change in the culture among the kids, among the parents, and among our faculty. So it really did take that year of gritting our teeth, though. I mean, seriously, it wasn't all hugs and kisses that first year. There was a lot of negativity. So here's what it takes to conclude. It takes a team that's empowered. We focused relentlessly on literacy, implemented with a plan, monitored like crazy, which took leadership from not just positional leadership. It took lead from where you are leadership. It took us all. Simple, not easy. Here's my final thought. This kind of change isn't about brilliance. It's about tenacity. If we can do it, anyone can. We were called a cesspool by the local media in 99, and now we're called the jewel of the city. So I think it's pretty cool that we went from a cesspool to a jewel. So on that note, I want to make sure I thank everybody for this early in the school year webinar. It has been a pleasure, and I can still, if somebody still wants to send messages, I can see that. But thank you, everybody, for your attention during this webinar.